Hi everyone, second video. So the first one was actually really well received. It kind of surprised me about how positive it was. But a lot of people thought it was a good idea. Apparently it is a good length. So I think it was about 13 minutes, not too long. A lot of people said that it was good to listen to while they were doing other things, which is fair enough. A lot of people also said they'd like it in a podcast, so I am working on that. Obviously, I've got the audio. I think the audio works just fine without the video, so I'll try and get that together as well. It is on my list, let's put it that way. So that was really cool. The feedback on YouTube, and to be honest, I normally try not to read YouTube feedback, because if you have a look at some of it, you'll see why. Anyway, the feedback was really good. So the comments were really constructive, really nice, and 100% thumbs up too, which was also pretty cool for YouTube. So it seems like it's worthwhile doing. I'm going to keep giving it a go. I am still at home at the moment. The next three of these, though, I'm going to be somewhere on the other side of the world. So we'll see how that works out, trying to do it like that. But I'm going to give it a good go. So anyway, moving on, a few things this week that I have covered off. So one of them was that I reached my 7-year blogging milestone, which kind of snuck up on me. I kind of got to this point where I went, my son's about to turn 7. That means my blog's about to have a birthday, because I started doing the thing a couple of weeks before he was born, which was, in retrospect, like a really weird timing. But for those of you who are thinking maybe I'd like to do something like this, but time, well, yeah, you know, I get it, but it actually worked out really well. So I talk a lot in that blog about how much stuff has changed for me. It is a very, very different life that I leave now compared to then. And a lot of it sort of began with the fact that I was doing this blogging and then the speaking and then the sort of outward reaching engagement. And the actual blog that I wrote at the time was, and this was the first blog, was that I thought online identities would be a good career move. And I can look back at that now and go, wow, I was really smart to have thought of that, because it's worked out really well. But honestly, at the time, I had no idea. It just seemed like a good idea at the time. Obviously, it's worked out that way, which is nice. But you might want to check that out if you're needing a little bit of inspiration, because it really has worked out very well for me, particularly over the last few years. It took a lot of years to get traction, but now I'm obviously quite happy about it. So that was one thing. Another thing is I had another Pluralsight course go live. So this is my 24th Pluralsight course now. This one is what they call a play-by-play. So most of my Pluralsight courses, just in case you haven't seen any before, are me talking into a microphone. You're not looking at me, you're listening to me, and you're looking at the screen, so the screencast. And look, they go really well. They're really good for explaining technical concepts in detail, lots of visual stuff, lots of walkthroughs and demos, which is cool. The play-by-plays are videoed, and it's not just me, it's someone else. So I've done a few of them before, and I did this one in July when I was in Chicago with one of the Pluralsight guys. And so Gary and myself are sitting there sort of having this very casual conversation, a little bit like this, except there's someone else. And in this particular case, we're talking about deconstructing the hack. So taking recent security events and then talking about some of the issues with them. So how did the hacks happen? We talk a little bit about things like SQL injection, touch on denial of service attacks. I talk a little bit about NISN. If you missed it, I'd found some interesting things with the help of one of the people who attended one of my workshops with a NISN leaf back in the start of the year. And we basically just go through and have this discussion. There's a bit of screen stuff in there, but look, I really like them because they feel very organic. I guess it's a little bit like this. It's not carefully edited. For context, when I record a full-on course, I'll record twice as much content as what I actually end up with. And literally sometimes every 5 or 10 seconds, but very often sort of every, you know, 10, 20 seconds, I am cropping out bits of audio, taking out mistakes I've gone back and repeated myself, so it appears like one smooth narrative. And a play-by-play is quite different to that. It's just a very sort of fluid thing. So I really like that. That's out there now. I'll link to that on the blog that I embed this video in. I've got two other play-by-plays that are already recorded. They'll be going live very soon. One of them not security either. One of them is quite a different thing for me to talk about publicly. but something that I find particularly interesting. I'll wait and let you see what that is. And I've just finished recording, as of about an hour ago, another full-on Pluralsight course, which is around information security big picture. And this is the normal sort of screencast thing. It's a fairly high-level course in that there's a lot of sort of visual stuff. There's a lot of references to news articles, little diagrams of how processes flow. And the idea is that it's for pretty much anyone working in an information technology capacity who really needs to understand things about some security fundamentals. Things like there is actually a lot of dispute around whether you should rotate your passwords. British government says you shouldn't. American government says you should. So interesting ins and outs of that. A few other cool things. The reason I've been rushing to finish that is because I normally try and record as much stuff as I can before I get on a plane, because planes are really boring. And because they're so boring, it makes editing just that little bit more, what's the right way of putting it, tolerable, because editing is mind-numbing. So anyway, I'm going to be sitting on planes doing a lot of editing over the coming few weeks. So that'll be coming. Something else I did this week, which was a different sort of audience for me. I did a talk yesterday at iPad Palooza here on the Gold Coast in Australia, which is a very edtech audience, so mostly teachers. And that was kind of one of these things where you go, how much can we scare the teachers, right? So how can we just do something and do a lot of things that kind of blows their minds? And one of the things I realized in preparing for this and then doing the talk is that we, as people that are probably more interested in security than most, tend to lose sight a little bit sometimes of just where the levels of understanding are for the rest of the community. So I went through a bunch of things. I went through everything from the normal Wi-Fi pineapple dog and pony show, which always impacts people. I showed them dark markets, how easy it is to access those. I had a 17-year-old student do a SQL injection attack using Havage, which is a pretty Mickey Mouse piece of software. For international viewers, Mickey Mouse is not the mouse, but it's a very simplistic piece of software, but it's great to just show how easy it is. Did that and just went through a whole raft of different things where they just went, holy crap, man, the web is so broken. You know, we've got so many problems. And the feedback was really, really good. And it's funny because a couple of the words that they used, I often find come out from my various talks, which are things like inspiring and scary. And I reckon that's a pretty good blend. I'm happy if people go away both inspired and kind of scared as well, because it leaves a lasting impression. So that was good. iPad Palooza was kind of cool. Other things in the news this week that have been interesting and have particularly caught my attention. One of them is there's a data breach, believe it or not, a data breach of a website called iDressUp. Now, you are probably not the kind of demographic, I know vaguely what my demographic is, but you're probably not the kind of demographic that uses it, because it's mostly teenage girls. And iDressUp is this very basic looking website which allows you to dress up characters. Now, the problem there is someone reached out to me a little while ago and said, I have the data. You know, like I've broken into iDressUp, I've got the data. And this is always a really uncomfortable sort of discussion, because on the one hand, I don't want to encourage the person to go and get more of the data. On the other hand, something needs to happen, particularly when it's a site like this that's involving kids too. So what I often do with data breaches now is that once they've happened and the data's out there and the genie's not going back in the bottle, I'll usually reach out to one of several journalists that I trust. And the journalists are very, very good at getting through to companies. So they're especially adept at crafting messages the right way, being a bit of a dog at a bone, pursuing the company until they get a response. And they usually get pretty good answers, except for this time, because they simply could not get any answers from iDressUp. Now, this was Dan Gooden at Ars Technica, who writes a bunch of really good security stuff. Good journalist, really understands information security, could not get any answers from them. And it took him about, I think he gave it about 5 or 6 days before he eventually went, okay, we can't hear from them. The data's out there as well. We're going to do the story. So the story went out, and as of today, a couple of days later, still nothing from this company. It's about 2 million accounts in there, plain text passwords, which is never real good, but it is something that still seems to happen quite a bit. And that was sort of the data breach woes of this week. Another interesting thing that came out this week was related to Yahoo. So yeah, last week I spoke a lot about Yahoo. It was all a buzz then. It was a very big news story, this 500 million accounts from Yahoo. Anyway, InfoArmor has put out a really interesting report, which has a bunch of insights. It's got some pretty cool stuff around looking at some of the individuals who are trading data in these dark web websites. So a couple of the names that keep popping up are people like Peace of Mind and Tesser88. And these characters have been selling data on some of these underground sites. They've been somehow obtaining the data quite early as well. So they've been getting things like the LinkedIn data breach, as far as we know, quite early in the life cycle. They appear to be brokers, which is interesting. The way InfoArmor describes the relationship between those individuals and then the relationships between brokers and the people who are providing them with the data, who may or may not be the people who actually hacked it, and then, of course, how the data is then onsold and commoditized in other ways. So I'll link through to the InfoArmor report. The really interesting bit, though, in that report is that they're disputing Yahoo's claim that it's a state-sponsored attack. And look, I mean, when Yahoo made the claim, it's always a little bit convenient to say, look, we got hacked, and we got hacked really bad, but they were really, really good hackers, right? Like, they were government, you know? It wasn't kids, or it wasn't, you know, cyber criminals, or whatever term we want to give it. It was a really, really sophisticated adversary. And you got to kind of take it with a little bit of grain of salt, but by the same token, when a company as big as Yahoo comes out and says, quite emphatically, it was state-sponsored attackers, yeah, that itself carries a bit of weight, because if they fabricated that story, or even if they drew very unreasonable conclusions, and then the investigation exposes that and it looks like Yahoo's been telling lies, that wouldn't go down real well. So it's a big claim that InfoArmor has made, I think. But I think what will sort of either prove or disprove this is that they're attributing the attack to the same individuals who broke into LinkedIn and Yahoo, well, not Yahoo, but LinkedIn and Dropbox, MySpace, Tumblr, all these sorts of things. And all that data eventually went public. So all of it went out onto the net. If it's the same people with Yahoo, you would reasonably conclude that it might be the same end result. We might see 500 million Yahoo accounts for sale on the dark market site, and then eventually trickling out onto the web, and then me having to load it into Have I Been Pwned? Now, I think that'll be the proof in the pudding. So will we actually see this go public and hence more than likely disprove the state-sponsored theory, or will we not see it go public at all, in which case Yahoo's position on it becomes a lot more feasible than what InfoGuard thinks it is. InfoArmor thinks it is. So that's the Yahoo piece, which is kind of interesting. Couple last really quick things. I am rebuilding my Wi-Fi network. I'm rebuilding all my network bits because I have had this, which is a heap of shit. This has been an absolute nightmare. In fact, not this one in particular. This one is the replacement that Linksys has sent me. But my other Linksys WRT1900AC just keeps dropping the throughput rate. So I'll have a connection and I'll be there working away and everything's really good. And often this is because I'm like sitting outside on my laptop doing something like that. And suddenly the connection will drop down to like 2 megabits and it's just, you know, barely usable. Reset the router, comes back. So I'm chucking all that stuff out. I got them to send me a new one. Anyway, that'll be eBayed. I'm gonna send them back the other one. I'm buying all Ubiquiti stuff. And every time I sort of complained about Wi-Fi connectivity, that the chorus of people saying, just go and get Ubiquiti, was quite loud. So I've got a little gist up there about how I'm gonna rebuild things. And I'm taking sort of logical pull requests, if you like, about how I should change that. So I'll link through to that. If you know what you're doing with Wi-Fi networks and the home environment, please check it out and let me know, because I really need to get this right, because I'm absolutely losing my mind over this dropping connection. Very final things. I did get the first sponsor up and running last week on my blog. That means there were no ads. There was only a sponsor, which is just one little line across the top. That seems to have worked out really well. Everyone has said this is awesome. There's no more ads. I'm happy because there's no more ads, and frankly, it makes a lot more financial sense to have a sponsor on board. I've filled about half of the coming month's worth of weeks, so I'd love to try and fill out the rest of them and fill out some time beyond that. So if you're a sponsor, potential sponsor, or know someone who could be, yell out. And the very last thing, as I mentioned earlier, I am off to Europe in a couple of days. I'll be heading off to London for a private workshop. I'll be in Scotland come this time next week, doing a talk and another private workshop. I still have spaces in my London workshop, which is around about the middle of October. And I'm going to put some links in there. I think it's about the 13th and 14th of October. Still some spots in there. I love to fill that out because it's kind of more fun when there's a bunch of people there. So look, that's it. I hope this went really well. I will try and get the podcast side of this up and running as soon as I can, which I don't know how soon it will be, given the travel things. I'll try and make it work. And thank you very much for the feedback and for continuing to watch. See you guys.